Welcome to Outbeat Radio on KRCB Windsor Santa Rosa, a program that focuses on issues by, for, and about members of the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, queer, and questioning communities. You can hear Outbeat Radio every Sunday night at 8 p.m.
This is Living Proof, and we're your hosts. I'm Dr. Diana Grayer, and next to me is my co-host and wife, Sheridan Gold. Tonight, we will be talking with Cassandra Abba. Cassandra, or Cassie, is an elder transgender woman who transitioned later in life. Pre-transition, Cassie served 28 years on active duty and an additional 14 years as a civilian employee of the United States Coast Guard. She currently is a freelance writer for her local community newspaper, The Community Voice, and has lived in Rona Park for 33 years. Hello, Cassie.
Hello, ladies. Nice to be here with you.
Yeah, we're happy to have you. So happy to have you, Cassie. We're very excited to hear more about your story. But before we move into our deep discussion on transitioning later in life and everything else you're involved in, all of your talents, here's news and events from Outbeat member and our engineer, Greg Moralia.
I'd love to change the world, but I don't know what to do.
This is Greg Moralia with your Outbeat Radio News for the week of September 4th, 2022. Last Sunday in Belgrade, a massive rally took place in the Serbian capital protesting a pan-European pride event that had already been canceled. The march was led by the Serbian Orthodox Church and joined by a collection of right-wing hate groups and pro-Russian nationalists. Bishop warned that the event was a threat to traditional family values, according to Reuters. The day before, the president of Serbia announced plans to cancel the long-planned Euro Pride in the city, using the excuse that there is just too much else going on. Serbian President Aleksandar Vučić claimed that the country is facing too many problems to handle the event. The Euro Pride celebration was to have taken place September 12th through the 18th. And while conceding the cancellation would be a violation of minority rights, Vučić said that at the moment the state is pressured by numerous problems, citing economic woes, tensions with neighboring Kosovo, and threats from far-right extremists. But the organizers weren't buying it. Christine Garina, president of the European Pride Organizers Association, that's the event's organizers, said, quote, "President Vučić cannot cancel someone else's event. The right to hold pride has been ruled by the European Court of Human Rights as a fundamental human right," end quote. And while the Central European nation has taken steps to further LGBTQ equity while applying for European Union membership, the far right in the country, inspired by pro-Russian nationalists, is balked. Violent attacks against LGBTQ people are commonplace, and the influential Serbian Orthodox Church has denounced Pride as a, quote, disgrace. And here in the U.S., the annual Straight Pride gathering in Modesto, California, turned violent for a second year in a row. And instead of arresting the Proud Boys, who started the fray, police shot into the crowd of protesters with pepper balls and beanbags. The event was held outside of a Planned Parenthood clinic, and the group of far-right militia members and hate preachers was vastly outnumbered by counter-protesters. This is the fourth time the group has held the event. The group uses the opportunity to hurl racist and anti-LGBTQ slurs at passersbys and protesters while soaking up local media and police attention. Two counter-protesters were arrested by the end of the scuffle, and only one Proud Boy was arrested. All three were charged with failure to disperse. After one of the militia members tried to push through a police line, a tussle ensued and LGBTQ defenders started throwing water bottles. Someone tossed a firework into the fray, but it's unclear what group the culprit was associated with. Two LGBTQ protesters were injured in the assault, and as the police moved onto the crowd with support from SWAT tactical units, the Straight Pride supporters hid behind police line. Last year's Straight Pride provocation ended in fistfights and bear spray. Reports say the militia group provoked the protesters, kicking off the brawl that closed down the streets and ended in the two arrests. The group has become the far right's enforcers, starting fights and attacking progressive activists across the nation. They stage fake pride events across the country as well. Boston organizers Mark Shaddy and Suzanne Yanni were arrested by the FBI earlier this year in connection to the January 6, 2021 riot at the U.S. Capitol after they were outed by a group behind Straight Pride. The FBI found out about the pair through social media posts from the organization Super Happy Fun America, which organized Straight Pride in Boston back in 2019. And here in the Bay Area, an Antioch woman is being held in the Santa Rita Jail in Dublin after allegedly attempting to kill a transgender woman in Berkeley at People's Park on August 21st. Police from the University of California Police Department responded to the scene. University of California Police Officer Sabrina Reich told the Bay Area Reporter that during the course of the investigation, it was determined that the assault was an anti-transgender hate crime based on information provided during the investigation. The suspect, a 20-year-old woman named Destiny Kellogg, was arrested after UC Berkeley police responded to a call about a tent being set ablaze and a woman being subjected to a violent attack. And here locally, Bobby Scopa, a transgender woman and firefighter, has published a new memoir titled Both Sides of the Fire Line. She tells her story about being one of the first out transgender firefighters to have transitioned on the job. Bobby will be at the Book Passage in Corte Madera at 1 p.m. on Saturday, September 24th, and then on the air with me the next night on September 25th on Outbeat News in Depth. Be sure to catch us at 8 p.m. and only here on KRCB Radio. For Outbeat Radio News, I'm Greg Maraglia.
I'd like to change the world, but I don't know what to do.
And if you just joined us, this is Living Proof with Diane and Sheridan. And tonight, as our guest, we have Cassie Alba. And we want to thank you so much once again, Cassie, for taking your time out of your very busy schedule to join us in studio tonight.
You're welcome. I enjoy this.
I'm really excited. I just want to tell briefly, because we want to know more about you, Cassie, but I just want to tell how it got started, how we learned about you. It was really a special moment when we were having auditions at the Roanoke Park Library for my new production, and people know who I am, so they know that I'm a playwright and director and producer. And we walk in the doors on the 13th of August, and look who was there. This woman, gorgeous person, friendly person, said, hello. I said, who are you? I thought you were coming to audition, but you're from the Community Voice to do a write-up about us and our production on gender identity. And I really appreciated that. And so we got to talking and we wanted to invite you to interview you on our radio show. And so here we are. So I just wanted to give our listeners some info about our meeting. Anyways, Cassie, you sent us a bio and it was like maybe 2 or 3 pages long. So we really want to know more about you. We thought we could have conversations about that. So tell us a little bit more about yourself.
Well, being an elder trans woman, that elder means that I've got a lot of life experiences, both pre-transition and post-transition. I transitioned in my mid-60s. Although I started my emotional transition a few years before that, trying to figure out what was going on with me. But I didn't run away from who I was as him. I just ran towards who I am as myself, my authentic self. And so everything that I did as him leading up to my transition made me who I am today. So I'm not embarrassed about what he did. Being a father, being a husband, being a career military officer, taking care of the troops, serving my country, getting my education, all those things were wrapped up in helping me when I transitioned to become the a full and authentic person that I am today.
You just said a lot. You said husband, children, officer. So could you start with your family?
Sure. I guess let's go back to late 60s is when I enlisted in the Coast Guard. I had lost my mother when I was 16. Therefore, I was kind of an emotional wreck. My dad pulled me out of college because he couldn't afford to leave me there. He had got remarried and picked up 4 more kids. I really wanted to go to college. So he and I decided with his permission that I was going to run away from home and join the Coast Guard. And I did that. And I was only going to serve 4 years, get the GI Bill, and go back to college. But I fell in love with the Coast Guard, especially the search and rescue mission. And after my training, my first duty station was in the Republic of the Philippines, and I was over there for a little bit over a year and a half, and that's where I met my future bride. It took me about 8 months once I came back stateside to go through all the bureaucrat paperwork to get my bride over here. But once she came over, we did establish our residence. And as I was working on my career, we started a family. We did replacement of one boy, one girl, and continued on moving all over the United States. Been in the Philippines, Virginia, New Jersey, Florida, Tennessee, twice out here to California. So my kids were raised as both vagabonds, but very cosmopolitan, having lived in many different places of the United States. And they wanted to finish high school here, so I ended my career in California. They got married and started popping babies, and now I've got 7 grandchildren to go with 2 children. My spouse and I were married for 48 years. She, God bless her, helped deal with my inner demons, as I called them, throughout our marriage. And when I made the decision to transition, my heart wanted us to stay together, but my head knew that she needed a man in her life, that she wasn't somebody that could be wife on wife. And the way we describe it, because it was amicable and we're best friends now, her love wasn't strong enough to go on the journey with me, and my love wasn't strong enough not to take the journey. But I appreciate that she is one of my best friends right now. We were married for 48 years. Last April, we celebrated 50 years of friendship. And I continue to see her once or twice a week, and we socialize.
Wow, how beautiful is that? What a journey. 48 years. And so she stuck by you, and she was able to work it out, and you were able to express yourself. Because I was curious. We're curious about that. So can you speak to that more?
Sure. So growing up, prior to my mother's death, I always knew I was different. But growing up in the 50s and 60s, didn't have the language or understanding. There were no role models in school. There was no gay straight alliance clubs. You couldn't go down to the library to do research about sexual orientation or gender identity. And then once my mom died and I started in the Coast Guard, what I started to do was build a facade, trying to do things that a normal boy would do to make their parents proud, all the routine things. And I built a facade. I kept my demons inside of me. When I got married, that was part of it. I loved my spouse, and I could overcome all these feelings for a little bit. And then every so often they would pop out again. And so we struggled trying to figure out what it was. And somewhere in the late 70s, there was a book that was published by Masters and Johnson called The Joy of Sex. And in that, they had a chapter on cross-dressers. And so we had an aha moment and thought, wow, okay, so that's what it is. Now we can deal with it because it's nobody's business what happens in the privacy of your bedroom, right? But it wasn't really true. Many cross-dressers get some type of sexual pleasure from dressing of the opposite gender. I didn't. I got a piece being dressed as her. The example I use is chores around the house. Dressed as him, they were a chore. Dressed as her, they were a pleasure. To get something done, to be myself. So I continued to struggle, and we dealt with it as best we could, and she stuck by me, and we kept it private because the fear was tremendous on both our parts if somebody found out.
What about your kids?
They did not know.
They
did not know. We were careful, or we think we were careful. At least they haven't told us they knew. But there was all that fear. Then what would people think? Would I lose my job? Would we lose our home? Those type of things. So we dealt with it, and I stuffed it in, and I stuffed it in. I retired from active duty, and continued my career. And then after a few years of different jobs, I went back to the Coast Guard as a master technical trainer for another 14 years. And then in 2007, so I retired in 1997, and 10 years later, I did something that started me down what they call a slippery slope. I got on the net. My family played a multiplayer game called World of Warcraft, and they wanted me to play with them. So I hooked up to the internet. And of course, when you were not playing the game late at night, I could go try to research what was going on with me. So I started with the term crossdresser and went down the rabbit hole looking for it. And that was the first time that I had ever heard the term transgender.
And how old were you?
At that time, I would have been 56. So for 3 years, I did a deep dive in the internet, reading stories of other girls and other folks that were transgender, and listening and seeing what they said about their journeys. And some things rang a bell and some things would be off kilter. And I would say, well, no, that's not what I'm feeling or not what I'm thinking. So it took me 3 years to finally accept myself, which I did in May of 2010. That's where the middle name comes from, that I was transgender. And I later learned that's what was the emotional transition, to come out to yourself, to learn to accept who you are. But it doesn't stop there, because now what do? You have family, you have career, you've successfully kept the demons at bay for 50 plus years. So I tried to cope for another 3 years. I did little things. I started to grow my hair. I got my ears pierced. I would wear polish on my toes because no one could see your socks on. Just trying to get touchstones of my femininity. And then, of course, in the privacy of my home, I could go a little bit further. But that only worked for so long. I had a significant emotional event in 2013. The stress and the fear built up, and I had a minor heart attack. Had no pain. I just passed out, fainted. And after a series of tests, including seeing a cardiologist, we determined I had had a heart attack. And he called it a painless heart attack. And I asked him, I says, Doc, how can you have a heart attack without any pain? And he said, well, it's not very common, but it's most common in women over 50. Ding, 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 ding. Another nail into the journey, verifying, okay, that's who I am. But now what do?
And you're still working at this time at the Coast Guard.
I'm still working in a military environment, although I'm not in uniform. I'm a civilian employee. So I decided I had to transition and started to take the steps to get ready, because it's not something you do overnight. I had to get out of debt to make sure I had financial ability to take care of not only my needs, but what would likely be support payments and taking care of my spouse. And so from late 2013 to early 2017, almost 4 years, I did that. And it was also the process of starting to come out to kids and family a little bit at a time to prepare them for what eventually would be. 2017, I started my medical transition. Late that year, I started my social transition when my spouse and I separated. And then I was still semi-closeted, kind of gender neutral, just going as my authentic self to safe spaces, LGBTQ spaces, until 2019 when the divorce was final, and then I went public. And 2019 was a significant year. So when I went public, my divorce was final in February. I got my first major surgery. I got my job with the paper at the Community Voice, where I could be my authentic self and be out and not just closeted in my apartment. I got all my documents that I wanted changed. So it was a significant year. And since then, I've been living very openly, very public as my authentic self.
Well, congratulations to you.
Thank you.
So I'm just curious about before the surgeries, how did you come to that? Were you in a group? Did you have a support group after so many years? How did you move on to those steps?
Well, the exploration was pretty solo and private, but when I decided to transition, I reached out to a local nonprofit called LGBTQ Connections and sat down and had coffee with the director, told her this story, and said one of the decisions I made was I wanted to be public about who I was, and I wanted to make it better for the generations that followed me. So I wanted to have an impact, and that was the reason for reaching out to LGBTQ Connections. I wanted to have an impact and start to get to know my LGBTQ community. And they did. They used me on panels, and I attended my first Transgender Day of Remembrance. I helped organize the Transgender Day Visibility March in Santa Rosa Old Courthouse Square that we had a few years ago. So I started to get active, but I didn't want to limit that activeness just to the LGBT community. I wanted to give back and be active and have an impact on the wider community, which is Roanoke Park and Sonoma County.
So you talked about keeping your demons at bay. Can you describe what you mean in more detail?
Well, there's internal transphobia. I don't think anybody wants to be different. You know, you sit there and you wonder, what's wrong with me? Am I ill? Am I crazy? Am I somehow distorted? Everybody wants to be accepted and quote unquote be normal, because you don't understand that normal isn't just male and female. You don't understand that normal isn't having these different feelings. So there's a little bit of the mental health struggle that you got to go through as you try to deal with them. You know, society puts expectations out what you should look like as a male and what you should look like as a female. And when you don't, you struggle with that. So demons was a broad term for me just to capture all those different struggles. How could I be myself but live up to the expectations? How could I build the wall to protect myself and my spouse and yet be who I was? And it's not easy. You know, some people think being transgender, the opponents say it's a choice. You made the choice. I made a choice to transition because the other choice was to keep trying to struggle with this and die when the next heart attack was a major heart attack. And I wanted to live. And I wanted to live openly. And I will give you an example of the difference between having the facade and being open about who you are. Friendships. I had many shipmates. I had many acquaintances that normally you would say were friends. But I didn't really have any deep, true friends. Because you can't have true friendship when you're keeping part of yourself from who you are and sharing it with those friends. After transition, I have true friends.
Wow. And you have true friends because you're able to be yourself.
Yes. Part of it.
What's another part?
Putting yourself out there. Mm-hmm. Being open.
Being seen, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Being seen. Visibility matters, not just for the generations that come behind us. It matters for yourself, the affirmation, knowing that you're making a difference, being accepted for who you are. But it takes work. You know, it's very easy to transition, and there are some in the community that have done this to transition, and they still stay pretty closeted. They don't go interact with their neighbors or go get a job or do things to live the full life. I made the choice to live the full life.
That's sad, isn't it? I mean, yeah, to do the transition, but not to be seen, not to go out, not to feel courageous enough to be out in the world free.
Yeah, the audience has to realize that the fear is real. That is one of the barriers for younger folks, the fear of your family disowning you and kicking you out of the house and becoming homeless. The fear that your employer will not want you in their workforce and you'll lose your job. The fear of losing family. The fear of walking out your door and being subject to violence. Now, granted, some areas of the country, that fear is more pronounced than others, but no place is safe. I mean, I am financially secure, I'm very open, etc. But there's always the thought in the back of your head when you walk out the door, is this the day that you're going to run into somebody that causes you drama, trauma, or even death?
Oh, yeah, I get fired up when I hear this because I'm all about freedom and we all deserve our freedom, you know, and it's disturbing to have those thoughts. As a black person, as lesbians, you know, we all have those thoughts.
Please remember that each journey, although there are similar journeys among the community, each journey is unique because there's different factors for each person. One of the things is that many women and girls who transition don't want to do Trans 101 and do education and explain being transgender, etc. I've been an educator, and I've always considered it important that you be very open. So I tell people when I first meet them and they find out I'm transgender that you will not offend me. Ask your questions. Because if you're afraid to ask questions, you can't learn. And that means that the very best you get to tolerance. You don't get to acceptance and understanding of who we are. And one of the analogies I also use is we're all diverse. We all have a diversity factor. Some of it's very visible. It might be sexual orientation or gender identity. It could be race. It could be religion. It could be being tall or short or large or small. We all have this visible diversity factor that makes us unique and different from those around us. But those factors are a very small part of who we are, 5% maybe. And the shame is when we focus on that small part of difference, we don't embrace the vast 95% of uniqueness that each individual brings in this world. Their beliefs, their feelings, their hopes, their dreams, their goals. And so we got to get past the differences so we learn the people. I had a good friend when I came out, and we'd been friends for 40 years, and she didn't know I was transgender. And I always remember what she told me. She said, Cassie, I've known you for 40 years. The packaging may have changed, but the soul is the same. And that was beautiful.
That is beautiful. It's time for our music break right now, Cassie. And with that beautiful story, would you introduce the song that you brought?
Yes, ma'am. I brought Standing in the Light by Jordan Smith. It's a song that resonated with me because that's a choice I made to stand in my truth and my light. And I love the song.
All right. Standing in the Light by Jordan Smith. Enjoy, everybody, and we'll see you on the other side.
Stand in the light and be seen as we are. Didn't I tell you I hear what you say? Never look back as you're walking away. Carry the music, the memories, and keep them inside. You laugh every day. Don't stop those tears from falling down. This is who I am inside. This is who I am. I Sadness behind you. Fight hard for love. We can never give enough. This is who I am inside. This is who I am. I'm not gonna hide. 'Cause the greatest risk we'll ever take is by far to stand in as we are, stand in the light and be seen as we are.
And if you just joined us, you were listening to Standing in the Light by Jordan Smith, and that was a song that Cassie brought along with her this evening. It was beautiful, very beautiful. I remember watching Jordan on one of those competition shows. Which was it? Was it American Idol?
American Idol.
Yeah. So go on to YouTube and check Jordan out and check that song out. It's quite glorious. And you mentioned that the song meant something to you because you were standing in your own light and it rang a bell for you. That's wonderful.
Yes, I call it my anthem.
Ah, your anthem. It's beautiful.
Right on, to have an anthem mm-hmm. that you can always call on to empower you, right? So, Cassie, to continue the wonderful first half of our conversation, I want to ask you about something you said and something that you wrote in your bio to us about your retirement. I mean, your lines, I seem like there are those clear lines, like you got a divorce. Did you two talk about, like, this is when you have to do this divorce before you transition? And then you retired and then you stopped working. So I'm just wanting to know more about those fine lines or those clear lines that you had for yourself. Why did you have to retire?
Well, there are choices, and every choice, every decision has a consequence. When I decided I was going to transition, I did not want to transition on the job at a military base. 42 years with an organization, I was semi-well known. I had taught thousands of students over that 42 years, and I knew there was going to be talk, but I didn't want to be there as the talk was happening. I didn't want to have to deal with those decisions of, okay, when do I use the authentic bathroom for me? How am I going to dress and work? How are our coworkers going to react to me when we're working together on a project? I ran away from that. And again, that's related to fear. You're afraid of what's going to happen. I remember the day I came out publicly. It was a Saturday on February 9th. And I announced it on Facebook. And then I sat there the rest of the day waiting for the responses. You know, military can tend to be kind of conservative. And I've worked with some crusty old sailors. And I was so glad that I spent that time because it helped diminish the fear. I was actually very surprised how supportive folks were and wishing me well. Not everybody understood and not everybody accepted, but no one was mean about it. Even those that didn't accept it, they just ghosted me. They just disappeared from my feed and from my life. They weren't mean about it. And so, as a rule of thumb, over 90% of the friends on my feed were very supportive. And I would say another 5 to 7% just didn't care one way or the other. It was no skin off their nose. And only a few disappeared. And even some of those came back 6 months or so later after they had time to digest it. And actually, that was kind of similar to family and friends. There was a range of different reactions, some very, very supportive, and you go, girl. And some hesitant. And that's understandable. I had years to struggle with and figure out who I was. And all of a sudden, this is sprung on them, and they need time too. And some took time. And there's compromises that you make. I mean, I had a brother-in-law, wasn't mean, very supportive, but he told me, he says, I've been calling you this name for many years. I'm not about to call you Cassie. And you just roll with the flow. He wasn't being transphobic. He was set in his ways. So those are the things that you do. And the other thing I think it's important to understand is you don't come out once. You don't make the big splash and come out. You come out over and over and over again. You come out to yourself. You come out to your family. You come out to your kids. You come out to your grandkids. Then you come out again. You come out to the public. You come out every time you go to change your gender or your name on a document. You come out again. And even now, and I'm 5 and a half, almost 6 years past the beginning, I still get mail that comes in my birth name. They got the change of address, but they couldn't get the name change. Go figure. So it's a continuous process. And people are different. The job with the community voice was really, really important. And I worried about that. How would people react to me as I'm interviewing? It's easier on an event like Miss Sonoma County. You're just a person in the audience and you're covering the event. But when you're doing a spotlight article or profile article on somebody, you're meeting one-on-one. And so you always have that fear. What will they think? And I found out it's not a big deal. People are people. And the paper makes no secret that I'm transgender. I make no secret that I'm transgender.
Wonderful. That's what we need, how to be open and to be welcoming that way. And you, did you do journalism before, or you, did you learn that in the military, or are you just a great writer?
No, ma'am. And in fact, when the suggestion was made to me by a friend that I should write for the paper, I laughed. Yes, I've done writing. As an instructional designer, I created scenarios and student workbooks and lesson plans and things like that, technical writing. But I've never written for entertainment or as a reporter. But I knew I had to do something, so I took a shot at it. And they gave me a little time on probation where they could get a feel for my writing. And I got a feel for whether or not I enjoyed it. After 380 articles being published, I am now starting to believe that I'm actually a journalist.
380-something, okay.
And I am a member of the Transgender Journalist Association. We have over 600 members worldwide.
Wow, I didn't even know they had such a thing. Wonderful. Hey, think about it. to be a journalist. That means you're putting yourself out there, you're meeting people, you're talking to people. It's not like you're a little secretary behind the desk or something and you never go out. I mean, that was courageous of you.
And I've been very active in the community. I mean, I've been on panels with the nonprofits. I've been in events with Sonoma County Pride, with Positive Images, with LGBTQ connections in Sonoma and Napa counties. I've tabled. I'm on the advisory board for Amar Paratotus in Petaluma, which is an organization working for gender-inclusive curriculum and acceptance in the elementary schools. I attended the 8-month Leadership Roanoke Park program. I recently joined the Roanoke Park Rotary Club of Roanoke Park Cotati. I'm part of the administrative council for my United Methodist Church in Roanoke Park, St. John's United Methodist, a very, very LGBT-affirming church if anybody's looking for a spiritual home. And each of these being out and associating with society is an affirmation that there's more acceptance out there than what our fear would lead us to believe.
That's good to hear, because you are involved in a lot. The list goes on.
And it's going to get bigger starting in December when I take my seat on the Cotati Roanoke Unified School District Board of Trustees.
Wow. Congratulations on that, by the way.
Thank you very much.
I love your energy, Cassie. I love your enthusiasm. So I want you to just give us like that image. I mean, our listeners can't see your expression when you're talking and sharing all the work that you're doing out there in the world and people are seeing you. I would like you to just share like before you came out to like right now. And then I want to talk about your surgery and how that felt, the change. And so okay, if you can give us a glimpse into that, you know.
The way I often describe it is prior to transition, I was existing. I would go through the motions and I'd have happy times, I have sad times, and I have accomplishments, but I was existing. Now I'm living. And folks that have known me, and I think this is generally true for most people who transition, they say, you smile, you look younger, you're engaged, you have a brightness in your eyes that was missing before. So instead of just going through the motions existing, I'm living an authentic life now. I'm having an impact, and it's wonderful. Is that what you were looking for?
Oh, yeah. That's beautiful. Yeah, you're living authentically. And I just got this image of in jail. That's the first thing that came to me as you were talking, because I work with imagery, and it just came like, you know, the closet, right? You were just like pinned down. And then all of a sudden, it's like this blossoming person comes out.
Well, you're a playwright, so you'll understand this. When you have an actor and they take on a role for one of your plays, good actors try very, very hard to get into that role. And if that person's supposed to be a rough and gruff, or if that person's supposed to be sweet and kind, whatever, regardless of who they really are, they put on this role. And so when you're transgender or gender nonconforming, for whatever factor or diversity reason, you put on that role for the world to see. But the difference is, when the play is over, that person can take off that role and go back to being who they were. For someone being closeted, not open with their gender, they have to maintain that role, maintain that facade, and don't dare slip up in case someone guesses what's going on. So living authentically, you get to take off that role and just show the world who you are and be who you are.
Sounds like it's just so freeing.
It is.
You know, I'm curious, back in the day when you were young, a child, did you have thoughts of wanting to be a girl and you just pushed them aside? Or when did those thoughts start coming to you? Like, how old were you?
I was probably 8 or 9 when I knew I was different, but I didn't have tools to do the exploration for that. It was only in hindsight, as I started to explore, that some of the things that happened when I was a youth started to make sense. Let me give you a couple of examples. I was an avid reader. For some reason, I loved the Nancy Drew stories. I enjoyed the Hardy Boys and stories of boys, but I fell in love with Nancy Drew and her escapades. Didn't make any sense back then. Another example, I always wondered why girls liked me but didn't like me. I had many friends who were girls, but I didn't have girlfriends. I could sit with hours with my girl neighbors and girlfriends, and we'd talk about the life and our goals and everything else. But it took me 13 invites before I could get somebody to go to the prom with me. And I was always cast in the big brother role, and that was frustrating. Another one, I think if you think back to your childhood, you can remember going out trick-or-treating for Halloween and what costumes you wore. The only one I remember is when my sister and I went out and she dressed as Daddy Warbucks and I got to go as Little Orphan Annie. It was both exciting and embarrassing, but I remembered it. It was vivid. So in hindsight, yes, I could see the clues, but in the moment, I did not know what my difference was. In fact, in my freshman year of high school, I entered the seminary, St. Louis Preparatory Seminary, because I was thinking my difference was that I was meant to serve the Lord. I quickly found out that was not my difference. So I only was in there 1 year before going back to public school.
How did you figure that out?
Because it didn't make sense to me. It was a time of changing for the mass, and the traditions were giving way to the Spanish and guitar masses, and there was changes. But not being able to be married, not being able to even interact in school plays or in mixed gender events just didn't make sense to me. And so I decided, no, this is not what was meant to be. You could be spiritual and believe in a supreme being without being a priest.
So you never put on your sibling, no heels or no dresses, no?
No, other than for the Halloween. No, I did not cross dress as a kid. I did like to read my dad's detective stories with scantily dressed women. And when the Sears catalog came in, you know what section I was looking at. And I fantasized, but no.
You kept it under wraps.
Right. And then my life changed when I was 16. I mean, my school decided that I was going to graduate as a junior. So I was scrambling to get the college entrance process done. Finally got accepted to St. Louis University, and I was going to go start school just after I turned 17. And then in the spring of 1968, my mother died suddenly, and my world shifted. I mean, I went into what I call autopilot. Emotions were shut down. I was adrift. My dad got remarried, moved to a different state. I started college, was kind of isolated. And then he couldn't afford to keep me there and pulled me back to where he was now living in North Carolina. And the family was a little bit dysfunctional. So we agreed to go to the military so that I could get the GI Bill and go back to college. And then, of course, you don't want to be different when you're in recruit training or in a structured environment like the military. You want to get along and be like the other folks. So that's where the process of stuffing it down, all the exploration or possible worry about finding out who I was went away, because I had more important things, especially after I got married and started having kids. I had to take care of my family. And so for years and years, I put them and everybody else ahead of my own needs.
So you were in the military when the don't ask, don't tell policies were in place. How were you affected by that?
Well, I didn't know I was part of that community. Again, in hindsight, I gravitated to the portion of the military that you would consider to be helpers. I was a teacher for other students learning their trade. I was a counselor, career counselor, a family advocate helping other families. I got involved in the late 70s in the military civil rights when Vietnam and the black-white issue was going on, and it was race relations. And so I was part of the process as it evolved into being human relations and then military civil rights and responsibilities. When I went to Austin Candidate School, my first duty after graduating was to be a military civil rights counselor and set up the civil rights program, our base in Yorktown, Virginia, and train other people. And I was one of the first people to take on teaching about sexual harassment in the military and investigating complaints of discrimination and sexual harassment. Eventually, because of my background, I taught at Officer Candidate School, taught topics of equal opportunity and equal employment opportunity, and went down as the senior Coast Guard instructor and liaison officer to the Department of Defense's Equal Opportunity Management Institute at Patrick Air Force Base in Florida. This was 86 through 88. And this is where we trained all five services about discrimination and prejudice. But it was more. It was about the history of Jewish Americans, the history of Native Americans, the history of Black Americans, the whole gamut of learning about people and the struggles that they went through for equal opportunity. So I did not know I was preparing the way for myself, but I'm very proud that I helped make a difference. I'm very proud in the military. They're not perfect, but they're one of the best equal opportunity employers in the United States. And I helped with the integration of Blacks and Hispanics. I helped with the integration of women. Yes, we lived through the don't ask, don't tell period, which was widely ignored by many people. Because if you were a good shipmate and you didn't put it in the command's face, no one cared. And so we finally got through that. And now we're struggling with my community, transgender community, and we're doing fairly well. Had a setback for a couple of years where the policies changed. But now under the current administration, my community can openly serve in the United States military. So the lessons that I learned through that 42-year process was that performance matters, diversity matters, but everybody can do the job. I often say, I didn't do anything as him in that 42 years that I couldn't have done as her during that 42 years. And the way that we overcame those barriers were with two things, education and leadership.
Wow, we're running out of time and we have so many more questions for you. I wanted to know just if you can say one sentence or two about the transition to corrective surgery for yourself.
Not everybody who's transgender needs surgery or wants or desires surgery, and they shouldn't have to have them in order to be considered their authentic self. Some of us do want different procedures. Generally, you're talking about three areas for trans women. You're talking about facial feminization, you're talking about breast augmentation, and you're talking about gender affirmation surgery. Transgender women could have one, two, three, or none of them and still be transgender women. For me, especially given the age factor, looking in the mirror when I could still see him was a trigger for my gender dysphoria. So the facial surgery was the thing that I wanted. And the process is not easy. You've got to go through your doctor for recommendation. You got to go through a mental health therapist for recommendation. Then you go through the surgery. And actually, it's not a surgery. It's a series of surgeries. And everybody gets a little bit different. Sometimes it's the nose. Sometimes it's the cheek. Sometimes it may be trimming the Adam's apple. It may be lifting the forehead. So you work with your surgeon about what you need so that when you look in the mirror, you see your authentic self and not him.
Thank you. That says a lot. That was beautiful. I never heard it that clearly before around the face, but thank you. Yeah. Thank you, Cassie. This has been incredible, beautiful interview. Thank you for sharing yourself so openly with us.
You're welcome.
And we'd like to ask you one more question before we have to leave, and that is, we always ask our guests for their words of wisdom. So what are your words of wisdom for the listening audience? What would you like them to know?
Okay, so I alluded to it earlier, try to put it succinctly. Everyone is unique. They are diverse for one reason or another. Sometimes it's visible, like race or gender, disability or age. Many times it isn't. Regardless, what makes us different from each other is only a small part of who we are. If we only focus on that 5% of difference, we lose out on the other 95% of richness people could bring into our lives. Don't focus on the difference, focus on the similarities.
Thank you so much for being with us this evening, Cassie. We really enjoy getting to know you.
And I enjoyed being here.
We want everyone to remember, like Cassie, you too can be living proof that through sharing your story and your words of wisdom, you can make our world a better world. This is Diana and Sheridan, and we'll be back next month. Until then, good night.
I can feel my soul ascending. I'm on my way. Can't stop me now. Then you can. So many answers, I don't know.
There are so many answers.
Realize that to question is how we grow.
To question is to grow.
So I step out of the ordinary. I can feel my soul ascending. I'm on my way. Can't stop.
So do it today, yeah. 'Cause I can see you.
Support for Outbeat Radio on KRCB-FM comes from listeners and from Rocky, the free-range chicken, and Rosie, the original organic chicken. Air-chilled, non-GMO, locally raised right here in Sonoma County, with no antibiotics ever. More information is available at rockyandrosie.com. You're listening to 104.9 KRCB-FM Roanoke Park and KRCG-FM Windsor, Sonoma County's NPR station. It's 9 p.m. Stay with us. Beale Street Caravan is next.